I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The U.S. Supreme Court appeared split today on President Barack Obama's plan to shield millions of undocumented immigrants from deportation. As WHYY's Bobby Allen reports, scores of Philadelphia migrants have a lot on the line.
As the country awaits a decision in the coming weeks, Vaselina Berez is anxious. Berez moved to South Philly from Puebla, southeast of Mexico City. She's undocumented, but would qualify under one of Obama's deferred action programs.
We're a little scared because we don't know what's going to happen. If the action doesn't pass, our quality of life will suffer, and it will be harder to achieve my family's dream of starting our own business.
The immigration proposals Obama announced 2 years ago have been put on hold since Texas and 25 other states sued to stop them. Texas says if undocumented migrants become temporary legal citizens, they'll have to be issued state-subsidized licenses. And that costs money, which Texas says is an injury that gives it legal standing before the court.
The argument that Texas is making would allow almost any executive branch policy change that imposes some administrative costs on the states to justify a lawsuit.
Drexel Law professor Anil Callahan says the court could throw the case out based on a lack of standing. Callahan says the roughly 4 million undocumented immigrants who'd benefit from the programs could now be in limbo. He says though the programs are a great temporary reprieve, it's no substitute for new laws that would create a pathway to citizenship.
This is really the kind of initiative that's a natural evolution when Congress doesn't act and you have scarce resources.
Callahan says if the Supreme Court punts, the case could very likely end up in front of them again sometime after the presidential election. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Over the weekend, Governor Tom Wolf signed a law making Pennsylvania the 24th state to legalize medical marijuana. WHYY's Todd Bookman reports that it could take as long as 2 years before most patients can access the drug.
The fight to pass a medical marijuana bill is over, but now comes the heavy lifting for regulators who have to launch Pennsylvania's program. There are going to be up to 25 different marijuana growing sites and 150 storefront dispensaries, all of which will need approval and oversight from the Department of Health. Plus, doctors will need a training course, and patients will need an ID card to make purchases. Becky Dansky with the Marijuana Policy Project, a national advocacy group, says there are a lot of details for the state to work through. It helps having Governor Wolf on board.
Especially the key at this point is having a governor and an administration that is supportive. In New Jersey, it took some dispensaries 5 or 6 years to open their doors after the law was signed, largely because the governor opposed the program and put up as many obstacles as possible to implementation.
Another key difference is that Pennsylvania is opening up medical marijuana to a much broader list of conditions. Patients with chronic pain, PTSD, cancer, and autism can all qualify. But while it's hard to estimate how many users and their doctors will opt for pot, we do know no one will actually smoke it. The initial plan is to only allow cannabis to be in pill, oil, or cream form, along with a vaporized version. Steve Shane is a Philadelphia lawyer who works with companies in the medical marijuana industry. He says the ins and outs of the bill make it hard to predict just how smoothly the rollout may go.
The interesting thing about the legalized cannabis world is that the past is no predictor of the future.
2 years may seem like the distant future for patients, but it's going to pass quickly for the people trying to implement the plan. For WHYY News, I'm Todd Bookman.
Well, given this backdrop, let's get a sense of how the industry is likely to roll out when it is up and running. And for that, I'm joined by Chris Beals, president and general counsel for Weedmaps.com, a site catering to patients and businesses and those interested in getting involved with this burgeoning business. Chris, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Now, is it fair to consider your website as kind of similar to Yelp?
That comparison's been used, but I think while the core site sort of has that, we do direct integration with labs and with point-of-sale systems. We have the largest point-of-sale system that's used in Spain. We have a larger point-of-sale system in the U.S. We have software for doctors managing patient loads and sort of recommendations and medical states. So I think really where we see ourselves going is probably being something more akin to a Google or a software platform for marijuana.
Now, Pennsylvania specifies that marijuana will be available in various forms, though not to smoke. Is that an outlier compared to other states with medical marijuana, or is it fairly typical?
It varies. It does allow vaporizing oil or concentrate, so that is sort of akin to smoking, but it's in a form that people aren't used to. I think that's similar to what we've seen in New York and some newer states to come online, but in many states where they've passed medical legalization, or I'd say the majority, allow using raw flower, the plant material. So Pennsylvania is a bit of an outlier in that regard.
Of course, I'm looking across the river at New Jersey, which is considered one of the most, if not the most, restrictive state regarding medical marijuana. I believe they have around half a dozen dispensaries, so 150 in Pennsylvania seems like quite a lot. But when you compare it to other states that already have systems in place, is that a lot?
You know, no. I think I often say to folks, there's more dispensaries and delivery services in the city of L.A. than all the states east of the Mississippi combined. I think while Pennsylvania has gone beyond what, say, states like New York or Illinois have done, you know, I still think that there's a lot of other states that have far more dispensaries and I think a wider range of indications for which marijuana can be prescribed.
Is there enough of a legacy or a track record yet in states that have this program established to then have a fairly good sense of how large the economic impact could be for Pennsylvania?
You know, I think it's tough. A lot of it depends on how big the patient base is. Pennsylvania has a system where doctors have to go through a screening and testing process to be able to prescribe marijuana. And we've found that limiting the number of doctors who can prescribe marijuana, or separately limiting the doctors who can prescribe to certain subclasses of doctors, has a real impact on the number of patients to whom you can prescribe. Conversely, I think how strong the security and financial obligations are on the dispensaries will dictate what prices are, and I think that'll correspondingly dictate how much of the current market that exists in Pennsylvania migrates to, a legalized medical market versus staying black market. You know, I think the other thing, I guess when looking at Pennsylvania, I think really is a lot of the states which have put forward, I think, medical legalization, I think one of the important things to consider is, what measures the state puts in to protect safety, things like seed to sale tracking, requirements around access or security cameras. And we've found that generally in states where those measures are extremely onerous, prices stay high, a black market flourishes, whereas, to the extent that those measures are more tailored, I think, to what the state and law enforcement can actually consume, you tend to see pricing, I think, stay at a more economically efficient level, and you see a smaller black market rate. So I think that's really one of the big things that's facing Pennsylvania right now as they look to make the actual regulations in the wake of the legislation being passed.
So with that, is there a vast disparity in pricing from state to state?
There is. You can see wholesale prices in Colorado at one point were about $1,600 to $1,800 a pound, when at the same time you had prices over $3,000 a pound for top quality product in California. So definitely there is pretty large pricing disparity right now when you have this system where product can't be transported across state lines and you have different growing conditions and growing regulations from state to state.
Thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you.
Chris Beals is president and general counsel for weedmaps.com. You can hear more of our conversation at newsworks.org. Still ahead this evening, Ryan Fitzpatrick appears to be the heir apparent on the Republican side to his brother's congressional seat in Bucks County.
What I offer to the voters is a strong background and a ton of credibility in what I believe to be the issue on this year's ballot, which is national security.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY. Sparks flying among presidential candidates dominate news coverage as the Pennsylvania primary approaches. Though some voters in Bucks and Montgomery counties will make a decision of national significance a little further down the ballot. As WHYY's Laura Benchoff reports, the 8th Congressional District has a wide-open seat that both parties think they can win. Tonight, she looks at the Republicans who want to hold on to it.
Swing districts get national attention because it's rare for a seat to flip-flop between parties. The outcome in a handful of competitive districts can tip the partisan balance in Congress and lead to dramatic disagreements over policy.
In a year marked by political division, Congress is closing with one last partisan brawl.
The plan calls for significant cuts to food stamps and Medicaid, along with a repeal of President Obama's signature Affordable Care Act.
House Republicans want to defund Planned Parenthood, and that effort began today with the first
right after winning re-election to the suburban district seat 2 years ago. Republican incumbent Mike Fitzpatrick announced it would be his last term.
So you've returned me for another 2 years, for my final 2 years in the United States.
WFMZ-TV out of Allentown caught his victory speech. The year following Fitzpatrick's announcement, four Republican candidates threw their hats into the ring, including early party favorite, State Representative Scott Petry. But everything changed in January when a latecomer entered the race, the congressman's brother, Brian Fitzpatrick. Less than 2 weeks later, Petry dropped out. Brian Fitzpatrick became the instant frontrunner, but shied away from media attention. Fitzpatrick's campaign didn't make him available then and still has never granted WHYY an interview. But at a recent forum hosted by a Tea Party group called Citizens for a Constitutional Government, all three remaining Republican candidates made their pitches to voters. Former Bucks County Commissioner Andy Warren, doctor and businessman Mark Duomi, and Brian Fitzpatrick, who's a former FBI agent. They addressed a couple dozen attendees in an echoey side room at the Quakertown Library. Fitzpatrick went first. He said his experience in law enforcement will help him make good decisions on issues that matter to voters.
What I offer to the voters is a strong background and a ton of credibility in what I believe to be the issue on this year's ballot, which is national security.
Having never run for office, Fitzpatrick casts himself as outside of party politics, even though he's the Republican Party's choice and the brother of the incumbent. Mark Duomi, who's a neuropsychologist by training, says he's running as the only true outsider in the race.
So I'm offering that conservative, problem-solving, common-sense approach to addressing spending, addressing our rights and privileges as citizens. Let's close the borders. Let's use some common sense along those lines as well.
Protecting the Second Amendment is another key issue for Duomi, who's won the backing of a gun rights group in the area. Last up was Andy Warren, a folksy and friendly Bucks County commissioner who served in the 1980s. He pitched his electability.
Well, I have won 4 times countywide. I have been elected by Republicans, Democrats, and independents.
Warren's been here before. He switched party affiliations in 2006 to try to win the Democratic nomination for this very same seat in Congress. He lost in the primary. At the event, all three candidates promised to be tough on immigration, enact strict voter identification laws, and work to restrict abortion. In spite of these similarities, the race is by no means a level playing field. The Bucks County GOP endorsed Fitzpatrick shortly after he announced his candidacy. He's also raised nearly $500,000 in campaign funds, 10 times more money than any of the other candidates. But Fitzpatrick has kept a low public profile. Duomi says that could be by design.
There are probably people that aren't going to realize that the name is different. The first name is different.
Whoever wins the Republican nomination on April 26th will square off against a formidable Democrat with national funding and support, either businesswoman Shaughnessy Naughton or State Representative Steve Sanisiero. Laura Benshoff, WHYY News.
Wondering about the Democratic candidates? Laura will bring you their stories ahead this week. And for more about the Republicans' platforms, check out newsworks.org. Let's hold out hope for clear skies Friday evening, the kickoff to Philadelphia's annual 10-day science festival. Joining me with a preview is Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. And Derek, where's the place to be Friday night?
It's almost anywhere around the city. Philadelphia Science Festival Citywide Astronomy Night has partnered with 30 different locations around the city to host amateur astronomers with telescopes so that folks in those neighborhoods will be able to go out that evening and get a really great look at some of the fabulous objects that are available to be seen in the evening skies this spring.
Might they also catch a glimpse of Derek Pitts?
Well, I will be out visiting around at different locations.
I've got my tip sheet out. What are some of your preferred of the 30 locations?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know if I could say which one is a preferred location because they're all fabulous for different reasons. It could be Schuylkill Banks, where you have a really lovely city skyline to observe past, or it could be a location that's further out from downtown Center City, say like Arboretum in Germantown, or it could be the Esperanza in Hunting Park, where they always have a great turnout with lots of families. So you get a different flavor and feeling from each one of these locations. And since we have 30 locations around town, and, oh, by the way, that includes a number of colleges and universities around as well that will have their observatories open, we have all kinds of venues that you can choose from. And fortunately, no matter where you live in the city, one of these locations is going to be near you. So you'll be able to have a great time finding out what's available in the sky and seeing it through a really nice telescope.
Preceding the kickoff, the Franklin Institute Science Awards program takes place Thursday.
I'd say the most prestigious science awards program in the United States. The Franklin Institute has been presenting awards for achievement in science since 1824, since we opened. And this year we have a fantastic list of really, really deserved scientists who are receiving awards from the Franklin Institute.
Drumroll, who's the main recipient this time around?
Well, the main recipient this time around is Dr. Bill Borucki. Bill Borucki is a guy who almost single-handedly, convinced NASA that they needed to create the Kepler spacecraft. The Kepler spacecraft is the one that has been identifying planets orbiting other stars. So to me, Bill Borucki is like a Galileo because Galileo provided the visual proof that the sun is at the center of the solar system and all the planets orbit around. What Borucki has done is he's changed how we see our galaxy. It's not unusual for a star to have a planet. In fact, we've discovered that many stars have more than one planet, in some instances many more than just one planet. So the potential is that there are hundreds of billions of planets. And so that just means that the instance for the possibility of life goes up just as dramatically. The incidence for the possibility goes up dramatically. It's really a major accomplishment.
More on this notion about this being the premier award presentation ceremony. I'm curious. Everybody's heard of the Nobel Prizes, for example.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing. More than half of the Franklin Institute awardees have gone on to win Nobel Prizes. Now, if we think about that, it's almost like it's a prerequisite for the Nobel Prize to win the Franklin Award Prize. If you look at the list of awardees of Franklin Institute medalists, all of the top named scientists you can think of have won a Franklin Institute Award.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dan.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old.
Finally, this evening, America's oldest zoo is expecting. The Philadelphia Zoo says a 21-year-old female gorilla named Honey is pregnant, and the baby's due in the fall. The zoo announced today that Honey's pregnancy was confirmed with an over-the-counter test like the ones used by humans. Dr. Keith Henshaw is director of animal health at the zoo. He says an ultrasound showed the baby has a normal heartbeat and that staff are closely monitoring her health. The father, well, he's a 31-year-old gorilla named Motuba. The zoo has 5 western lowland gorillas, which are critically endangered. In addition to the expecting couple, there's 16-year-old Lewis, 16-year-old Kira, and 13-year-old Kachumba, who's also Honey's son. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Amid the debate over how to reintegrate ex-offenders into society, one Pennsylvania town is actively blocking landlords from renting to those with convictions. More on that story on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.